The reading this morning is taken from Luke chapter 7 and verses 31 to 35. To what then can I compare the people of this generation? What are they like? They are like children sitting in the marketplace and calling out to each other, "We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not cry." For John the Baptist came, neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he was a demon. The Son of Man came, eating and drinking, and you say, "Here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners." But wisdom is proved right by all her children. Amen.
Good morning, church. Morning. Good to see you all. I was reminded by Facebook that it's the anniversary that I've been on Facebook. I joined Facebook because we had lived in Suffolk for so long, and we had lots of dear friends there, and we knew that we would be leaving them. There were people that we had wept together, laughed together, shared our hopes, our dreams, we'd shared our successes and our disappointments. And it was a way of just keeping in touch with friends and keeping the friendship going. It was also an opportunity to keep in touch with family, our kids, my sisters, relatives, scattered all around the world now. But it was an opportunity to remain in contact with people that we loved. Since then, I started getting friend requests. And to be honest, some people think, yeah, they are friends, but I think these people are just acquaintances. What would you say the difference is between a friend and an acquaintance? So I think friends know you by name. And I remember the number of times Jesus called people by their name. Barbie, you got friends? Yep.
That's their friend.
Yep.
An acquaintance doesn't know you.
So friends really know you. Do you know, I'm not sure I would have been a friend of John the Baptist. I'm not sure he was the send a friend request type. And I'm not sure I would have sent him a friend request either. John the Baptist came neither eating bread or drinking wine. Well, he wouldn't have been much fun, would he? I can't see John the Baptist meeting up, you know, let's have a night on the town. Let's have a jolly up somewhere. He lived out in the wilderness for a start. And what would you give him to eat? They're just, how many recipes do you know for locusts and wild honey? And the camel hair. What's that about? Wearing odd clothes like that. Well, let's never stop John Bustle, I know, making friends, but... But Jesus, on the other hand. Jesus, I think, is someone I'd like to get to know. I think Jesus would be a friend. He knows the worst about me, but wants to be my friend anyway. So, you know, the most popular title that Jesus gave to people when he was addressing was, it was friend. You know, when he was preaching, yeah, I tell you, friends, or to the individual, friends, your sins are forgiven. You know, it said that you can tell a person by the company they keep. And this was a real problem for the religious leaders. It was the company that Jesus kept. And it seemed to undermine who he was. It undermined his credibility. Now, later in this chapter, we see Jesus at the home of a Pharisee. And the Pharisee criticized Jesus for allowing a woman to wet his feet with her tears, wipe his feet with her hair, and kiss his feet and anoint them with oil. She wasn't giving him a pedicure, but it was a public act of devotion. A woman touching a man who was not her husband was outrageous. And the type of woman that she was, the implication is, this woman is a prostitute, and she's doing this to Jesus. And the the Pharisee says this: if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. You can't be a prophet, you can't be a holy man of God, and allow yourself to be contaminated by these people in this way. You see, for the religious establishment, they saw sinners as having some sort of disease that you needed to put into quarantine, keep them at arm's length. You would cross the road to avoid them. And for the religious leaders, it was guilt by association. You mix with these people, you condone in their lifestyle, you must be like them. But you know, Jesus is a friend, no matter what it costs his reputation. See, for Jesus, being friends is more important than his reputation, because he was secure in who he was. It didn't matter to him what people thought. He treated everyone as a friend. He didn't treat people as the enemy, which is what the religious leaders did. They treated people as the enemy. Jesus treated them as friends. See, rabbis, they avoided sinners. They said, let not a man associate with the wicked, not even to bring him the law, because they saw people as, well, they are lost causes. They are outcasts. You can't do anything for these people. They're never going to change. Why bother? You know, sinners were not anonymous. They were publicly acknowledged and labelled as such. Now, I think probably these days people would be quite insulted if you called them a sinner. But sinners were people who did not keep the religious laws and traditions. A sinner, yep, prostitutes, they were obviously living immoral lives. But there are other people as well that were classed as sinners simply because the job that they did, their occupations such as being a shepherd, a donkey driver, an estate agent. But it could be that you had friends that were not Jewish, that you were mixing with Romans, Samaritans. That classed you as a sinner. You were unclean because the people you mixed with, they didn't have a lifestyle that wasn't kosher. These are people that didn't keep the Sabbath. And these sorts of people, they were sinners, and therefore they had their civil rights taken away from them. They couldn't hold public office, could not be a witness in a court of law, could not look after charitable funds. Well, that's Geraint out of a job. But you couldn't adopt children, couldn't be a childminder. So, and nice people would cross the road to avoid you. These people would therefore be excluded from worship. But no, Jesus spent his time not with the nice people, the respectable people. He made friends of tax collectors and sinners. And tax collectors, I guess they could be the worst, because they had sold out to the Romans. They were unscrupulous, cheats, notoriously dishonest. You know, a strict Jew could hardly bear to pay taxes, let alone collect them. So it was left to the more unsavory characters in society. These are people that bought the right to collect taxes from the Romans and then used threats and coercion to get their money back, but to make a profit. So they didn't just charge the tax, they charged extra. Otherwise, they sent the management round to visit you. And so they grew rich, being corrupt, taking bribes, engaging in extortion. So these were the people that had the villa on the Costa del Jericho. They had the BMW chariot, the Rolex sundial, and the Calvin Klein loincloths. Jesus mixed with these people too. It said that while Jesus was at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. And the Pharisees saw this. They asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" And Levi, he gave a great banquet for Jesus at his house. And it says he invited a large crowd of tax collectors came, and Jesus was eating. It was a real jolly up with these tax collectors. The Pharisees wrote these people off. They'll never come to anything. Lost causes beyond help. But you know, Jesus was able to look beyond people's labels and see someone of value and of worth. He could see what people could become. See, no one is too bad. He saw people. This person's got potential. They were not incurable, but he was a physician that was able to come and take up these messed up lives, transform them. He saw people who were lost sheep without a shepherd, and they just needed to be found and brought home. He didn't write people off. We were his enemies, and he loved us, and he gave his life for us. I like this man. I like this man. He was welcoming. This man, it says in the scriptures, welcomes sinners. There was a welcome for these. The Greek word for is also found in Luke 2. When baby Jesus is brought to the temple, and this elderly Simeon took the baby Jesus up in his arms and blessed him. That same word, to take in your arms, the same as welcoming. That's what Jesus did. He reached out with open arms to welcome people. It's like the story of the prodigal son. He came home and his father saw him from a long way off, moved with compassion. He ran and he embraced him. Jesus positively embraced these sorts of people. He positively embraced tax collectors and sinners, whereas the religious people wanted to sort of keep them at arm's distance. Jesus welcomes and embraces. You know, there was something about Jesus. He treated people in such a way that people felt welcomed. They felt at home in his presence. They felt, hey, this is where I belong. He was able to do that for people, to be received, to accept people. I wonder if this is a mission statement, our vision. To be like Jesus and make people feel welcome. That's what Jesus did. Welcoming. He had that ability to make people feel at home. I guess people were able just to relax in his presence. They felt safe. They felt comfortable and therefore open to his message. Didn't have to worry about your P's and Q's in your language. I think when people feel welcomed, they know that you are giving them your complete and undivided attention. You know that you are accepted. You know, you can go to some places, can't you? You just feel awkward. It's like a fish out of water. Church can be like that sometimes, isn't it? For people who are not used to coming, people in the community. A welcome that makes people feel this is where you belong. This is home. Nothing is done to make people feel uncomfortable or put them on edge. There was something about Jesus that he was just approachable. Crowds would just want to get to know him. He was approachable. And there are some people, you only have to look at them and they're giving the message, stay away. Their body language, their look is saying, don't come near, stay away. I think Jesus, he was like, he was a magnet, that he was able just to draw people to him. He had that ability to establish a rapport with people. It says in Hebrews, we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, But we have one who was tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin. Do I get the impression that the Pharisees, they could not sympathize with people's weaknesses because they thought they were perfect. In Jesus, we find someone that is able to sympathize. I know how you feel. I know what it's like. I appreciate what you're going through. He's the sort of person that you could approach, that you could tell your hopes, your dreams, your fears, your disappointments, your failures, and your sins, and still feel and find a home and feel welcomed. Now, constantly in the Gospels, we see Jesus being touched and touching. There was this constant connection between him and people. He knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. I like that in friends. They understand. They understand. I like this where it says of Jesus, all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Isn't this Joseph's son? They asked. The words I've spoken, they are full of spirit and life. I think you're spending time with friends. What gracious words. I like the things that he says. I'm attracted by him and his words. Spending time with friends are invigorating. They're words full of spirit and life. And he was the sort of person that he didn't tell you big, long theological words. He told you stories, things that you could relate to. And I think that's all part of that friendship, a rapport. He used examples from everyday life. Do you know, Jesus doesn't call you servants or to be his servant. He calls you to be his friend. I tell you, I don't call you servants, but I call you friends. He doesn't call people to do things for him. He doesn't call people to slave for him. He calls people to have a relationship with him, to say, this is my friend. Number five. And he ate with them. That was, again, an outrageous thing to do. To eat with someone was a real sign of friendship, a sign that people were welcomed into your inner circle. Beginning of Luke 15, the tax collectors and sinners were gathering round him to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Wow, eats with them. They were tax collectors. They had been handling grubby money all day and then sat down to eat with Jesus. And they didn't wash their hands. And we find the Pharisees complaining about this. You're eating with people and they don't wash their hands. See, the religious people, they went through the rituals. They sat down to the table. The bowls of water came out and they're washing their hands and drying them. Sinners just tucked in. They ate buffet style. Common bowls of food. Common bits of bread that you tore off and dipped in the bowl and ate, and you picked up another piece of bread. No spoon and fork, no knife. They used their hands. How do you feel if passing a glass of wine round to someone and the guy next to you still had his breakfast in his beard? Or you're given a cup of coffee and the cup hasn't been washed properly. So if you are wearing pink sugar lips this morning, we know who you are. Inviting people for a meal at King's at least gives you some assurance of cleanliness, we hope. But Jesus, he went into people's homes. In fact, sometimes Jesus invited himself into people's homes, as in the case of Zacchaeus. When he got into Jericho, there was Zacchaeus up a tree, wanting to find out what's going on. Jesus looks up, calls him by name. Zacchaeus, come down. I must come and stay at your house today. I must come and stay with you. And then it says, all the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. You know, friendship is also about being at home in the other people's territory as well. It's going where they feel comfortable, where they feel safe, and making yourself at home in their place of security and safety. But you know, this was a friendship that flowed out of compassion. Compassionate friendship. The times when Jesus, it was said, compassion. I have compassion on these people. They've been here for 3 days, they've had nothing to eat, and I don't want them to go away hungry. He had compassion on people, and he reached out and touched them, filled with compassion. Just a bit further up in that chapter 7 in Luke, we see Jesus and a crowd of people coming into the village of Nain. And as he comes in, there is a funeral procession. A widow is burying her only son. And it says, Jesus, filled with compassion, went and touched. That compassion there, it is a tenderness. It means to be soft. It doesn't mean that he was a soft touch, but it means that he was able to be easily wounded himself. Susceptible to the pain and the grief of others. That empathy. I feel your pain. I think that's what friends do, don't they? They feel with you. They feel it with you so they can weep with you, so that they can laugh with you. But they feel with you. That's Jesus. His friendship that had a compassionate friendship. Now, we can feel pity for someone. Sometimes we can see things on the TV and we're filled with pity. And then another program comes on and we forget all about it. It wasn't pity, but compassion. And when your heart goes out, your hand follows it. Always with Jesus. When his heart went out, his hand went out, and he had to do something, whether it was feeding people, healing people, raising people from the dead. It's compassion. I cannot not do something. He was moved, and he had to do something. Friends get their hands dirty for you. It's messy. Friendships can be messy. There was an incident, I think it's in Mark 7. Jesus in this crowd of people, and there is a guy there, and he is deaf and dumb. So what does Jesus do? He says, open your mouth and put your tongue out, and I'm just going to touch it. Oh, is that what friends do? You've got something wrong with you? Open wide, to do it. He healed lepers by touching them. A diseased body covered with ulcers, running sore, yucky, smelly discharges, a mass of ulcerated growths, their fingers and toes dropping off. Jesus wasn't squeamish or put off by deformity. It says he reached out and touched the man. It doesn't say he poked him. Okay, let's just pray for you like this. The word it's used to embrace. It's like he stood before this man and put his hands on his shoulders and held him as he prayed for this leper with all his sores. That didn't put Jesus off, still wanting to touch and hold. Probably the first time in many years this man had ever been touched by anyone. Do you know, there is nothing so ugly in our lives that Jesus can't touch it. Nothing so ugly in our lives that Jesus still does not want to be our friends. You know what, you've done the worst of things. You don't think Jesus knew that already, did you? He knows what we've done. He knows what we've done. And he still wants to welcome us and embrace us and touch us. Do you know, it's costly being friends, isn't it, Eric? Yeah, keep going. We must have another one. Yeah, costly friendship. Having that depth of friendship, it is costly. Friendship is costly. Demonstrating the love of God in the community, it's costly. It's costly. It was costly for Jesus. At the end of a day, when you're tired and weary, and I just want to switch off, relax, there's a whole load of people there needing to be healed. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and the demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed. At the end of a day, I'm just ready to go to bed now, and suddenly all these people turn up. Costly in terms of time. People were more important than food, having to delay dinner because there were people to be dealt with. Costly in terms of personal space. The crowds pressing in upon him, trying to touch him. Costly in terms of intrusion. You know, I just want to walk out with my friends and suddenly a needy person barges in and demands my attention. When he healed people, he felt power going from him. It wasn't just a word that he spoke. He was personally drained. Who touched me? I felt power go out from me. Friendship is costly. You know, being in the people business, it's costly. But you know, friends give you their time, make themselves available. Friends go the extra mile. So Jesus today is still looking for friends. Would you like to be a friend? I like this guy. He attracts me. There is something about Jesus. And today I'd like to introduce you to a friend and ask you to make a response in some way to Jesus this morning.